This is a special hour-long version of our series Haitian in the Heartland from WYSO's Elko Berker Center for Community Voices. I'm Lukens Merzies, and I'm a Community Voices producer at WYSO. I will be your host for this hour.
Suspend ba nou chaf, nou pa mre drop. Pa vle diskisyon ki san aksyon. Mem le gen diskisyon, nou ka gelinyon. Ki ba nou fos sou lak opinyon.
Are you signed up for WYSO's daily newsletter? I'm Caitlin Schrader, the digital editor at WYSO. And each weekday morning at 6, I send you the latest headlines from our community and across Ohio. Our reporters are producing trustworthy journalism that connects you to our community and goes beyond obvious answers. Stay informed and inspired each morning and sign up for our newsletter today at wyso.org/newsletter.
Welcome back. I'm Lukens Merzies. You are listening to an hour-long special presentation of Haitian in the Heartland. Over the last year, many stories have been told about Haitians living in Springfield, Ohio, some true and some not. What you are about to hear are stories of Haitians in Springfield sharing the truth of our lives and our own voices. Stories of living home, of survival, of community, of holding on to culture and shaping a new one. This is 91.3 WYSO. Let's begin. You will first meet three of us, me, Miguelito Jerome, and Virginia Jerome. All of us came to the U.S. for safety and opportunity, but we didn't arrive without loss. In this first segment, we discuss what pushed us to leave Haiti and what we left behind.
I think one of the questions that most people might have is, you know, what's the situation in Haiti right now? How that situation kind of influenced us to migrate to the U.S.?
I mean, I don't want to speak for everyone, but I think that's what, we'd want our listeners to think about, you know, reasons that could push you to leave home. And not necessarily wanting to leave home, but still having to do so, and the different sacrifices that we had to make. You know, some of us, at least for me, I was a child, I had no say. Basically, I got uprooted and left. You know, I left my friends, my family.
Yeah.
And that's the story that a lot of us have and we share.
So great. You talk about it because, you know, people, they said, why we left behind your wife, your kids?
Oh, yeah. I heard that.
And I think here people move from one city or one state to another, maybe for better opportunities, you know, job wise. There's a little bit of that, too, as to why some Haitians have migrated to the U.S. and Springfield, because of more opportunity. So that same reason, I think others can relate, but there's more. And I do not wish that anyone else or any country, any group get to experience the different reasons as to why, you know, some of us have to leave. It's tough situations that literally
push you.
Push you up. Like you said, like, you know, everybody has a different, you know, stories.
And it's just dangerous right now back home, you know, again. Gun violence, gang activities.
I was afraid for my own life and for the people that was around me. And I would stay at home and not going out.
Yeah.
And it's the worst. Yeah. It's like being in a jail at your own place in your own country.
Yeah.
We lost the power to be ourselves in Haiti.
My aunt had to flee the country with my twin cousins. Because of kidnapping threat, actually, she received a call and they basically told her where her kids were, what time they normally go out, what color dresses they wore XYZ day, what time they come home, where they were born. So they literally knew everything about her and asked $120K per child.
Shoot.
Should they kidnapped them. So literally the very next morning, she took a flight into the U.S. Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I extend my, you know, invitation to people to, share our stories, share our experiences.
I think I want others to see the humane side.
Like journey.
Stories about the journeys that some of us had to take.
I think this is a great start, you know, with Haitians and the heartland, where it's pretty much the story of so many immigrants, you know.
It's the sacrifices, the decisions that prompted to leave home and to migrate here.
People will discover hope, faith, resilience, and community.
I'm Lucan Smezis. You are listening to WYSO. When my wife and I came to America, our daughter Mali had to stay behind Haiti. I couldn't get her visa in time. In this next segment, you will hear a conversation between me, Mali, and her little sister Sephora. We talk about family, school, and now it feels to finally be together again in Springfield.
It was sad. It was sad. I talked to Mali's grandma and her aunties, and then I talked to my family, my like my brothers and sisters. They said, "Hey, Lucas, you can leave because we're gonna take care of Mali. You know, you can go." So I have to make that decision to leave Haiti. I did, and you know, it was very difficult. Mali was 4 years old, and every single time I had a conversation with Mali, she said, "Dad, when you come to pick me up? When? Why did you and mommy left me in Haiti?" Sometimes I said, "I'm not going to call Mali because, you know, I don't want to talk to her." I felt guilty. Last birthday she had in Haiti, I said, "Do you have a wish?" She said, "Yes." She said, "My next birthday will be in the U.S. Mali's here right now with us. So go ahead, Mali.
When I was at the airport, Sephora kept looking at me like she think that I was the wrong person that you guys picked up. She didn't think that I was her sister.
Really?
Yeah. Because she looked different in the phone, like when I call her.
Okay, the video, like on WhatsApp video.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then she introduced me to her friends and went to play outside.
What has been the hardest thing about adjusting to life in America?
Going back to redo my grade.
You know, you just came to the U.S. and so I wanted you go back to fifth grade. And you said, "No." I said, "Mali, you have to go back to fifth grade because, you know, you just came to the U.S. So you have to learn more English." You know, and you said, "Okay, Dad."
The hardest thing was that when I got into class and I had to present myself in front of everyone, they spread rumors about, I was friends with them anyway. There's some that left the school because they felt insecure and they homeschool.
So, you know, people sometimes can say bad things about you is for no reason, you know, and it's just about lying. And Sephora, so I know you have a bunch of non-Haitian friends. So did you share Haitian story with them, like food or they like?
Some of my friends say that if they have a birthday party, they want to invite me to meet my parents or something.
Okay.
Yeah. How did you feel when Mali was coming to the United States?
Oh, I wanted to be with my daughter, you know. it was great to see my daughter come to the United States.
You are listening to 91.3 WYSO. This is a special hour-long version of Haitian in the Heartland from WYSO's Elko Berker Center for Community Voices. Some stories are best told between friends. Earlier in this hour, we heard from Virginia Jerome about her journey to the United States. For this segment, Virginia sat down with her childhood best friend, who we're calling Katie. Both of them came to the U.S. from Haiti, but Katie's journey was less direct and harder in some ways. What she shares is universal. A mother's desire to protect her child, even if it means crossing borders and facing fear.
She chose and came up with the name Katie. Though she came in here legally, she just felt more comfortable and safe using an alias. I spent 13 years with Katie, because that's when I left Haiti at 13. She'd come over to the house, we'd play with our dolls together, color, watch TV, play video games. It felt really nice, you know, to see her and touch her, because now we're both mothers. I felt the need to share Katie's story because a lot of the times, we take decisions for a better living and hopes for something better for our kids. I wanted to share how it impacts a child. I asked her what pushed her to leave Haiti in the first place. And her answer to me was that insecurity was the main reason. The gun violence is extremely, extremely bad. Schools are always closed. Sometimes you might go to school and not be able to come back home. You have to basically sleep at some random place. And sometimes you have to ask a neighbor who you may not even be close to, can you sleep there? Because you just don't know when they'll hit you. They literally kidnap anyone and ask for a ridiculous amount of money. Sometimes they'll spare your life after that money has been given. And sometimes that ransom means nothing. They can still kill you. They torture you. Katie then shared with me that her child's behavior changed during the journey to the U.S. She was screaming, she wouldn't listen, she was just very uneasy because, you know, she got removed from her home, her friends in school, going through all of that in the hopes of having a better life. And again, me as a new mother now, it broke my heart, you know, it broke my heart hearing how unhappy the child became, how she really didn't want to play anymore, didn't really want to speak. And, you know, she did not want to put her child in such hardship if it wasn't for something more rewarding that's promised, if I can say it that way. And I just wanted people to be aware of the different traumas and experiences that children endure or experience during journeys when their parents, you know, decide that, okay, we're going to move into the U.S. And I just want, you know, people to be aware and see that human side that we all go through. I later asked Katie if she hopes or dreams to ever be able to go back home to Haiti. And she expressed that even though it's really uncertain how that would happen, but really hopes that one day they all can go back home and give back to our country.
Now, we are invited into Janet's kitchen, who is Katie's mom. WYSO Community Voices producer and a longtime Haitian journalist, Miguelito Giro sat with Janet as she cooked griot and fried plantains at her new home in the United States, just like she used to at her successful catering business back in Haiti. Janet left everything behind, but she's building something new and still finding ways to pass her culture on to her daughters and granddaughters here in America.
When I arrived at Janet's apartment, a familiar aroma of grill, a beloved Haitian dish, filled the air. She was at the stove preparing the pork to pair with plantains, while her two daughters and granddaughter playing around in the background. I began by asking what made her decide to leave Haiti. She explained that life there had become unbearable. It wasn't safe anymore, she said, describing the constant instability and threats that made even daily life dangerous. Even though she worked hard as a successful caterer, the dangerous environment forced her to leave behind everything she knew. She explained that as much as it hurt, she knew it was the only way to give her child a better future. Even when things seemed impossible, she reminded herself of the life she wanted to build for them. I asked about her journey to the U.S. border. It was dangerous, especially traveling with two young children, describing how she endured theft and exploitation along the way. I asked what it was like to adjust to a completely new environment. It wasn't easy, she said. You know, learning the language, understanding new systems, and adapting to a different culture was overwhelming at first, but she approached each challenge with determination. I asked her what sacrifices she had to make, and she said, there are so many. From physical exhaustion to the emotional pain of leaving family behind, but she was quick to add, it's worth it for my children. I just want my children to have opportunities I never had. Her hope is that they grow up with stability, education, and the freedom to dream big. I was curious about how she managed to hold on her Haitian culture while building a life in a new country. Oh, you know, I cook Haitian food all the time, she said, describing how she makes griot, soup jumu on New Year's Day, and teaches her children Creole. It's important they know where they come from, Miguel, she explained. I asked her what she hoped for her home country. Haiti needs strong leadership, she said firmly. While she remains hopeful for change, she acknowledged the immense challenges Haiti faces. Still, her pride and her heritage was undeniable. I asked what message she would share with other Haitian immigrants. We have to help each other, supporting one another. Janet's journey reminds me of the incredible sacrifices immigrants make for the promise of a brighter tomorrow.
Now for something a little bit different. No story about Haitian identity is complete without music. Gary Filido is a WYSO Community Voices producer, a longtime Haitian journalist, and an accomplished compa DJ living in Springfield. In this next segment, Gary takes us on a journey through decades of Haitian sound, from early days of Nemo Jean-Baptiste to the Afrobeat inspired by compa music of today.
Le compa, ou compa direct, est bien plus qu'un simple...
For nearly 70 years, compa has been the heartbeat of Haitian music.
C'est le cœur battant de...
Created in 1955 by Nemo Jean-Baptiste,
depuis sa création en 1955 par Nemo Jean-Baptiste,
it blends merengue, quadrille, jazz and Cuban rhythm, quickly becoming Haiti's signature sounds.
Dans les années 1970, le compas...
By the 1917, bands like Tabu Combo modernized compa with funk and Caribbean influence. expanding its reach worldwide.
À partir des années 1980, des groupes comme System Band, dirigés par le regretté...
The 1918 brought complex arrangements with System Band and Zangler.
...complex et des sonorités sophistiquées. Haïtien pamplié, non te préside l'histoire, voyant. Marqué l'ascension de groupes comme Karimi, Creole,
Will Karimi and Harmonic fused compa R&B and pop in the 2000s. Since 2015, artists like Joey Dwetfile, Woody Woodboy, Kenny Aiti, and bands like Impossible have introduced Afrobeat and trap elements. Today, Compa continues to evolve, inspiring new generation while staying true to its roots.
For WYSO, Gerli Philidor. Tu manges with me, babe, c'est tout droit. La carte des blocs, disons
alléluia. Finally, we close this section with Jacques Adler Jean-Pierre. Jacques is a renowned Haitian poet, journalist, and activist. He was arrested and brutalized for calling out corruption back in Haiti. He came to Springfield to survive, but he has never stopped telling the truth. He has a large following on social media and writes daily about issues that affect Haitian people. In this audio essay, Jacques shares what it means to live in exile, but to still fight for your country's future.
Je m'appelle Jacques Adler Jean-Pierre et mon histoire est celle d'un homme qui... My name is Jacques Adler Jean-Pierre. In Haiti, I was a cultural and political journalist. My profession allowed me to denounce injustices. My involvement in protests led to my brutal arrest. During my detention, my dreadlocks, a symbol of my pride and identity, were forcibly cut. After my release, the threats intensified. I narrowly escaped several armed attacks and through kidnapping attempts orchestrated by gangs working for political mafias. I had to leave Haiti to protect my life and that of my family. I knew I had to build a new beginning. In June 2024, I arrived in Springfield, Ohio, but nothing was easy. In the United States, each day was a fight to integrate, to learn English, to provide for my family. The language barrier preventing me from finding work that matched my skill. Donald Trump was threatening to deport all Haitians living in Hawaii. I not only had to adapt to a new culture, but also insecurity. Dans cet environnement hostile, my past as an activist journalist seemed invisible in a country where everything worked differently. The respect and wealth known man I was in Haiti became just a stranger here. Despite everything, I refused to give up. The struggles I've shared are mirrors held up to my compatriots, whether they are still in Haiti or, like me, have been forced to leave. I know exil has changed me, but it hasn't broken me. I believe that my voice, even in the shadows, can still resonate. My story doesn't end here. I will continue to fight, dream, and defend what I hold dear.
You've been listening to Haitian in the Heartland from the Echo Breaker Center to Community Voices at WYSO. We are going to take a quick break, and when we return, I will share with you all story I produced last month about Haitian Flag Day celebration in Springfield for WYSO's Arts and Culture series, Culture Coach. I'm Luke Smerzis. We'll be right back.
I'm Lee Wade, host of Translucent, a new Community Voices series sharing stories and perspectives from transgender people.
We need to do a lot of work of getting our stories out there, and not to say that we should be telling the sob story of the trans person. Stories of resilience and community success.
Translucent is supported by the Ruby Girls Foundation.
Welcome back. This is a special hour-long version of Haitian in the Heartland from WYSO, the Echo Breaker Center for Community Voices. I'm your host, WYSO Community Voices producer, Lucan Smerzis. So far in this hour, we have heard stories of migration, sacrifice, music, resilience, and community. But there's one day each year when all of those themes come together. That day is May 18th, Haitian Flag Day. Haitian Flag Day marks the creation of the flag in 1803, just before Haiti became the world's first black republic. For Haitians around the world, it's more than just a holiday. It's a reminder of who we are. And in Springfield, Ohio, we celebrate that proudly. This past Flag Day, I attended a community gathering at Christ Episcopal Church in Springfield. There was music, food, blessings, and stories. Haitian and non-Haitian neighbors came together to honor the past and celebrate what we are building here in Ohio together. Here is that story. Each year on May 18th, Haitians around the world celebrate Haitian Flag Day. The flag was first created in 1803, just months before Haiti became the first black republic in the world. The flag is a powerful symbol of pride, unity, and freedom. This year, Springfield's celebration was held at Christ Episcopal Church. People from all backgrounds came together to enjoy music, food, blessings, and storytelling. I spoke with Haitian and non-Haitian guests about what this day means to them. and how events like this help bring people closer and keep the culture strong here in Springfield.
Yes, I'm the Reverend Michelle Boomgard. Some folks from the Haitian community came to me and said that they had been looking for a place to celebrate Haitian Flag Day, and could we, you know, and they didn't have a place. And so we said, you are welcome to come here. I wanted to give them a place that was safe, that they could celebrate this really important day for the Haitian community. I've been to Haitian Flag Day 2 years ago when it was in the park, and I remember what a joyful day it was, and I wanted to let the Haitian community have a chance to have that kind of celebration again. So it wasn't today, it was 2 years ago when I first went to Haitian Flag Day. I was at the park, and some of the Haitian friends that I have sort of told me about the symbolism of the flag, and I can't remember it all exactly at this moment. But there was something they said about they had taken, it was two colors because they had taken away the sort of the division between the people. And I thought that was really profound. And I like this idea of, as your motto is, you know, the unity, the importance of unity.
Norman Horstman. I heard about it at the event for the Haitian Support Community Center at the John Legend Center. And just hearing the historian talk a little bit about the rich history of Haiti, and then also the music there was so good. I realized there that we had world-class music in Springfield, and I didn't need to drive anyone out anywhere else but to come out to some Haitian events to enjoy incredible food and music and people. Just, you know, we're grateful for our neighbors. We're grateful for what the Haitian community brings to Springfield and Clark County, and we certainly are enjoying it. We know there are problems and challenges, but with that, we enjoy working together to try to be good neighbors.
I'm going to translate. My name is Ricardo Lape. We share our culture and experience in our everyday life. There is a lot of love and celebration in our community. And that is what we try to share with others. We try not to have enemies. We welcome everybody.
Was Tamar Joseph?
Was Tamar Joseph. My message to the younger Haitian people here is that even if you are born in the United States, you are still Haitian American. And I suggest that the parents encourage their kids to speak Haitian Creole to preserve our culture. I've been living in Springfield for 3 years, so this isn't my first time at a Haitian Flag Day event here. It makes me happy that Haitian leaders get together and organize this so we can showcase our culture. Haitians in Springfield stay proud of their roots and are committed to keeping their culture alive. I'm Lucas Mezis, reporting for WYSO Culture Coach Series.
Welcome back to this special hour of Haitian in the Heartland on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Lucas Mezis. So far, this hour, you have heard stories of culture, migration, and identity from the roots of Compa to the hope carried in a great mother's kitchen. Now, we shift our lens forward. What happens after the journey to the United States? What does it feel like to rebuild your life, especially when the political winds shift and you begin to wonder if your welcome has expiration date? Over the past few months, I've spoken to both Haitian immigrants and Springfield residents as part of a project called 6 Months In. These are people trying to make sense of the world we are living in right now and what it means for their future here. We start with my neighbor, Daddy Finfin, Haitian business owner and realtor. Since temporary protected status came under threat earlier this year, his home has been at times filled with fear and uncertainty.
Daddy Finfin, one thing is, in my house, because I have my mother, I have my sister, they have temporary status. So they was really afraid when they know they're gonna get back in Haiti before the time that the status need to be terminated. So when I came in my house, I saw my sister crying, because she got too much confusion. She doesn't know what really she gonna do, what really she have to do, because too much information spreading in the air, and we don't know which one is really the better one we can use to plan the future. It's like right now we are in a moment of uncertainties, so we cannot really project to big thing. So for me, I do real estate. So my main target is the Haitian community. So because of this situation, I cannot really get a good planning to say, okay, for this year, I want to sell X amount of house, because right now, my principal target, my principal need, there are a lot of confusion for them because of their status. It's just the confusion that we have right now that doesn't allow us to project. The thing I want to say is to talk about the Haitian community, the Haitian folks living in Springfield and all over the United States, to let them know right now it's really important to be careful about the information that they have, to be careful about the decision that they take. It's really important to double check every single information that they have and try to get the best sources to verify if what they hear at the first time is the right information. So it's really important. If someone want to talk about immigration, the best thing to do is try to go to the website, the USCIS.gov, and there they can have the best information. And if they want to get information about safety, about security, for all of the state, they are a safety department. So all the department have website. It's really important to go to the website and see what really in safety this department say. So for me, it's the best thing. And every single day to know you are not at home, you are not in your house. Yes, you have the right, but the best thing is to be careful.
Next, we hear from someone who is not Haitian, but works closely with our community, Pastor Adam Banks of First Baptist Church in Springfield, describes the heartbreak and the courage he's witnessed among his congregants in the past 6 months.
What made me close to the Haitian community was the ways in which Haitian members of this community have contributed so deeply, so richly to the culture, to the economy, and then more closely connected to me, folks coming into the church and contributing just absolutely integral ways to the life of the church, to where the church would not be who it is, would not be as faithful as it is without these Haitian members. And so, indebted to and wanting to honor those contributions in the way that I and the church stand in solidarity in this season. My role as shepherd has shifted tremendously. Fellow pastors in the community, specifically Haitian pastors, we were planning to begin a process of cultural exchange and education, building relationships with one another, and then growing toward educating and sharing about cultural particularity in order to bridge that gap. And with the change of administration and over this last several months, there has been a change in our ability to communicate with one another and uncertainty around just the effectiveness of such an effort and endeavor to learn one another's culture, with just not being sure about how long we'll be able to be in fellowship with one another. And so that has changed my identity, my role, how I try to figure out how to lead and be faithful in this season. We were joining together for Sunday school, and one member was extra distraught and disheveled this day and eventually spoke up as we were engaging in conversation, just fed up with this sentiment of not knowing exactly what to do to stand in solidarity with our immigrant neighbors, feeling helpless, feeling, I guess, defeated, or the threat of defeat was the sentiment that was expressed, and just exhaustion. And many could speak up and identify with this member, and I mean, including myself. However, I am encouraged by many of my Haitian neighbors, many who have spoken up with confidence and with courage, and I think really expressing a scripture from the New Testament that talks about being hard pressed on every side, but not crushed, and being perplexed, but not in despair, being persecuted, but not forsaken, pressed down, but not destroyed. And knowing that our strength, that our wisdom, our ability to discern this season comes from God, a God who will most definitely see us through. And so definitely discouraged, but not defeated in this season.
Our next voice is from another Haitian neighbor of mine, Daniel Villemont. Like many Haitians in Springfield, Daniel has been on high alert in the past 6 months, constantly checking the news. But recently, he says, an English class became a lifeline.
My name is Daniel Villemont. Before I looking for news, or I inform myself about political or no decisions by occasion or when I have time. But right now, because so many things going on, I feel like it's something I have to do every single day, even several times a day, because changes they making right now, it's so fast. If you not stay focused, if you not try to stay informed, you're gonna lose track. So that's why I try to at least to listen news once a day, even twice, three times a day. I was in a English class. It was a online class, and I was prepared to learn English as always, because it's an English class. And that day, the teacher said, We're not gonna learn something related to grammar, something specifically related to English. We're gonna talk about immigration. And the teacher did a presentation about immigration and stuff, how it was about our rights. It was about how we can talk to an immigration officer, stuff like that, how we can prepare ourselves and our family in case we face an immigration issue. So I learned so much from the class that day about immigration. It was very touching, and I was surprised how so many people, how people in US, I mean US citizen, even they not in our situation, even some people never been in a situation like that, but they understand, they have empathy, and they try to provide us their support the best they can. So it was very touching. It was very meaningful, and even it's a very hard time for me, but it was something I very, very appreciate.
And finally, we visit the Clark County Health Department, where Nurse Supervisor Christina Conover has spent the past 6 months listening to her Haitian friends.
Yes, my name is Christina Conover. I am spending a lot of time, every time I'm in the car, I'm turning on the news, and I'm trying to keep up with all the changes that are happening and what is Trump saying today, what are the, you know, judges, what kind of pressure are they under, and it's kind of like I'm flipping between stations. You know, I don't have time to listen to commercials, and I try to hear, you know, different points of view, but I feel like I'm constantly trying to find some consistency. I'm kind of bracing for what's happening next. I feel like it's important. It's my duty to be aware of what's going on and the changes that are happening. So that is one thing that I've noticed. I'm very much more attuned to staying in touch with what's going on politically. There are a collection of smaller moments that have made an impression on me over the last couple months. For example, talking to a friend, a Haitian friend of mine, who was worried about her young children and what would happen to them if she, for some reason, was detained sometime in this upcoming year, and just, you know, what options she had for what would happen with her children. Talking to a friend who now has full responsibility of his young son, while the mother had to move to another city, another state, to actually work in a state that was more designed for her to be able to use her license, her professional license, and work. Hearing from a friend, you know, that he wasn't sure what was going to happen as far as him being able to stay in the U.S. for the next year, but while he was here, he was going to make every effort to, you know, further his education and further his study. And he felt like right now was the gift that he had to try to get as much out of the opportunities that he had for education while he was here. And then also, like, another example would be hearing stories, especially over the Easter weekend, hearing stories about how Easter weekend is celebrated in Haiti, especially historically, and maybe not today, certainly not in all parts of Haiti, is that an opportunity, but the feeling of homesickness that I hear as people are describing, like, what the big celebrations were, and family, and just seeing my friend say, oh, I just wish it was like that now. So when I think about all those little collection of moments, I see, like, a lot of courage and a lot of sadness and worry, but a lot of strength and a lot of just resilience, like desire to not give up.
You are listening to a special hour-long edition of Haitians in the Heartland from the Echo Breaker Center for Community Voices here at 91.3 WYSO. Over the past hour, we have heard voices from kitchens and churches, from dance floors and dinner tables. These stories have been about the complexity of starting over in a country that doesn't always understand where you came from or what you had to leave behind. But these are also stories of pride, survival, and reinvention. And for all the hard work in these stories, there is something else too, something even stronger. There is hope. Hope that by telling our stories, we'll be seen. That by speaking our truth, we'll be heard. That by building community, we can shape something new together. Thank you for listening to Haitian in the Heartland. You can find all of the segments you heard today on our website, wyso.org. For WYSO, I'm Lucas Mercedes.